We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Eli, let's rock.
Make me a bicycle clown.
Welcome in. My name is Lawrence Holmes, here with you until 10 o'clock tonight. We have a full boat show. 4 hours of us to get into all sorts of stuff. On tonight's show, we are going to discuss the Cubs and their nice series sweep of the Miami Marlins before they welcome in the White Sox this weekend. And you could probably think that that's probably going to be a sweep too. But we'll talk about that a little bit later on. We're going to talk with Michael Beller of Sports Illustrated. He's got thoughts on the Cubs, and he's got some quick and very early fantasy football tips for you, some that concern the Bears. So we'll do that before we get out of here at 10 o'clock. I've been promising a portion of the Ed Lynch interview from Hit and Run. I've been derelict in my duties as host of this talk show of getting it to you, but there's been stuff that's happened in between that hasn't allowed me to do so. So tonight we are going to get to it because I think it's really good. I'm interested to hear your feedback on some of the things that he had to say, because as a listener, as I was listening, driving out to my parents' house on Sunday, I was really interested in what he was saying. I found myself, you know, turning the volume up on the discussion. I thought that Barry and Joe did a great job with the interview. To start things off tonight, I have invited two very good Bears beat reporters in-house. I want to talk a little bit of Bears with them. Maybe we'll, you know, throw a little baseball at them as well, because I know that they both watch and at least pay attention. But I'm lucky to have Mark Grody from our staff, who will be covering the Bears this year, has already started to get a taste. He's been up there at Camp Nagy as it gets ready for the next mini camp, which is starting at the end of the week. And J.J. Stankovic, who I work with at NBC Sports Chicago on our Bears coverage over there, he is one of the hosts of the Under Center podcast and does an incredible job covering that beat. So sit back, relax, and strap it down, because we're going to have what I hope is a fun and informative conversation. Gentlemen, thanks for coming in here. I appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure. Made it in from the rain, which was nice.
Yeah, there's a bit of a monsoon that was going on for you, JJ.
Yeah, I sprinted in from the Uber to the warm welcome of the building here and didn't get super wet. So, but also I'm sitting far enough away from all you that if I did smell like a wet dog, you wouldn't be able to smell it, I hope.
Yeah, I've had a casualty of my socks, actually. I literally came in here and threw my socks away. I thought I was going to beat it. I bailed out in the Hilton Hotel down the block. It was pouring. I said, you know what? I got my cheap umbrella. I'm going to make a run for it with
this
my umbrella.
This is not cheap umbrella weather.
No, it's not. It never is. And I've got about 17 of them, because generally I'm not prepared for these monsoons. I usually bail out to a Walgreens to buy the umbrella. Today I had it, so I got a little cocky, and it didn't work out. My pants are soaking. I threw away my socks. But you know what? Like you, JJ, good to see you. I'm here.
I had a moment like that a couple years ago, and it's funny because I was thinking about it yesterday, because yesterday was the 3-year anniversary of Derrick Rose hitting the shot against Cleveland. And when Derrick Rose got traded, I was actually at a Cubs game. I was at a Cubs game. I'm sitting there and he gets traded, and then it started raining. So my show, I think we had Bears All Access that night, but because of the trade, Mitch said, we got to go like 6 o'clock. You got to be on. So I rush back here, and it's just pouring rain. Same situation as you, Groats.
socks just destroy. And, and it changed the way that I approach. Like, I have a locker here. Like, you know, we have these little teeny tiny lockers. So now I have extra clothes, like, in the locker now.
Smart.
Just in case something like that happens. Because there's nothing worse than having the wet socks that are squishing around in your shoes.
I have a 137 average, I think, when it rains, having the right clothing and or paraphernalia to take care of it.
I'm
so
curious about your umbrella strategy, though, because if you buy 17 cheap umbrellas, wouldn't it be a better strategy to buy two nice umbrellas?
Well, yeah, of course. I think that's one of those things you should pay for, but it's not like I went and bought 17 umbrellas. It's like
I go to Costco and buy a pallet of
umbrellas. I'm just never prepared. So I'm usually in the middle of some long walk, so I bail out into the Walgreens and, or whatever, and I buy the umbrella. So then they just kind of stack up having all these cheap umbrellas. I actually had mine with me today, and the system didn't work.
See, I think that this is the worst city for terrible umbrellas.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, because you rarely get the, oh, it's just raining. And that's what the cheap umbrella is for. Oh, it's just raining. There's no wind. You're not going to walk around the corner of a big building, and there'll be some wind tunnel that'll knock you backwards. You got to get you got to splurge, man. You got to splurge for the expensive umbrella.
What you're saying is that you previously took the Ryan Pace strategy of what he did from 2015 to 2017 of buying some cheap umbrellas, seeing if they would work out. When they generally didn't, now you got to go splurge for the big umbrellas, the three-year $42 million umbrella.
Right, because they actually break, like some of those players that Ryan Pace signed and or drafted between 2015 and 17.
Look at JJ. He has become just a very skilled communicator, leading the conversation exactly where I wanted to go. That's honestly the first thing that I wanted to talk with you guys about. Not free agency, but strategy of Ryan Pace. Is it fair to say that his draft strategy has changed? JJ, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I think it changed to an extent of you look at the guys who we took previously from Kevin White to Leonard Floyd to Mitch Trubisky, and these were guys with big potentials but also low floors, high ceiling, low floor type guys where you're not taking the I don't want to call it like the easy pick or the solid pick or the safe pick, but like Roquan Smith was just a very strong draft pick. Where he maybe doesn't have the highest ceiling that Tremaine Edmonds had, but you know that from the get-go, Roquan Smith could be the defensive rookie of the year. He could be a Pro Bowler. That's his profile, just right from the start. Same goes for James Daniels. I think same goes for Anthony Miller. He's not going out and getting a Division II tight end in the second round. He's going out and getting an extremely productive wide receiver from Memphis and a very solid offensive lineman from Iowa. So if you look at those first three picks, it does represent somewhat of a deviation from a lot of the top picks Ryan Pace has had in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. These are safe picks, and Ryan Pace has been pretty much generally applauded for the work he's done so far in free agency this year and in the draft this year. And I keep thinking to myself, he had to get it right this year, that he had to get, at least as you said, the three players that you mentioned are all guys who could potentially be starters on day one. He had to, if he hadn't gotten one of the big wide receivers, Allen Robinson or Sammy Watkins, Jarvis Landry, then there would have been trouble. But he went out and he got that guy. So everything that he's done has been great or good. I don't know how you want to put it. But it had to be. It had to be this offseason.
You say it had to be. For the overall success of the team, for the success of Mitch Trubisky, it absolutely had to be. But he just signed a four-year contract extension. For his own job security, he could have gone out and he could have not addressed the needs that the Bears needed. He could have continued with kind of the same strategy of, you know, going for the Marcus Wheatons and the Marcus Coopers and hoping you hit on a Kendall Wright and a Prince Mukamara and still had job security. So for his own personal, if he's being selfish, he didn't have to get it right. But for the health of the franchise, for the overall, you're absolutely right, Mark, he did.
Well, I mean, I think obviously he has the contract security, but I think for his own credibility, I mean, I think that counts a lot, I think, for general managers in this league. And he tried some of those things that you talked about, and they didn't work. So he had to get it right this year. And yeah, he's got the four-year contract. But, you know, if he was to have a miserable fail this year in terms of what he did, even just looking at the rough draft, then next year that puts a whole lot of pressure on him. And, you know, GMs, coaches have been known to get fired with contract left.
I have some questions about Pace as a talent evaluator and as a GM overall. And I think that those questions are justified with what we've seen over the last 3 years. That being said, it's hard for me, and I would count myself as one of the harshest critics of the Pace regime. I feel like from the moment that John Fox was fired until now, it's hard to look at what Pace has done and be upset with it.
If you want to look at the Cam Meredith decision and be upset with that, fine. But look,
I could pick a nit with that.
You could
sure.
pick a nit with it, but also if his medicals are not what the Bears wanted to commit to, then you go ahead and make that decision and trust your medical staff. And in addition to that, he then went out and drafted Anthony Miller. So it's not like you just left this gaping hole where all of a sudden you're going to be starting Josh Bellamy from week one. You went out and drafted Anthony Miller to make sure that there's even more competition in that room. And now you have Robinson, Gabriel, who am I forgetting?
Kevin White,
and Anthony Miller,
and
now.
Trey Burton too.
And, Burton essentially another target,
right?
So
he's a U,
right? So he Pace went out and still addressed the one questionable decision that you can point to and say, who knows, by drafting Anthony Miller.
Well, and I think that they're, you know, back to the Cam Meredith thing, and this eventually will go away, but I think it's possible too that the medicals are real. But what if they just this was just a player they didn't think fit, that they, for whatever reason, evaluated and didn't want on this team, that they, as you mentioned with Anthony Miller, this is a guy that was a premeditated draft pick, that this is they moved up to get him. So they had to have had him, Anthony Miller, or somebody like that in their heads. I don't know if that's the case, but I think that that's been discounted. The possibility that maybe they didn't like Cam Meredith, that maybe they didn't think, for whatever reason, that he was not a fit for this offense.
I mean, if he were the absolutely perfect fit for Matt Nagy's offense, they maybe would have made more of a move to keep him, regardless of the medicals.
Right.
But I think you look at Cam Meredith, he's still a productive wide receiver, 66 catches, 888 yards in 2016. Doing that from being an outside guy. He played outside a lot. He had a lot of production from the slot. So he does have the ability to kind of flip in and out, which is what Albert Wilson was really good at last year with the Chiefs. And I think it's what Anthony Miller can be good at with the Bears. So I think a lot of it just had to be with the medicals, where if they said, we don't want to commit 2 years, even though you look at $9.6 million and you say that's not a lot of money, Ryan Pace always has done a good job of managing the cap. That is one thing that if you look at his history, there's only one contract that really hamstrung them with the cap, and that was Pernell McPhee. Everyone else had a 1 year out, essentially. So I think you trust Pace's cap instincts on that. Now, look, if Cam Meredith goes and has a big season in New Orleans and Anthony Miller struggles or Allen Robinson struggles or any of these receivers struggle and Mitch Trubisky doesn't have the best structure around him, then it's fair to go back and say, what did the Bears miss in Cam Meredith's medicals and how did they screw that up? But for right now, I don't think you can look at it and say this is the biggest deal with this team.
I'm talking Bears football, Mark Grody and J.J. Stankovic. They're hanging out here with me for the first hour of the show. J.J., since you've been around the Pace regime, I'm curious, what do you think he's learned about the job?
I think he's learned that trying to be the risk taker and the really aggressive GM sometimes will backfire. And sometimes it's good, and I think he's learned how to kind of tailor that aggression to, okay, you know what, this year, here's how we're setting up, let's go get Allen Robinson. Instead of when he started off saying, let's make a big splash, let's go get Pernell McPhee, even though maybe McPhee didn't fit totally what they needed at the time, given where the team was after the Trestman era, you know, he traded up to get Leonard Floyd, traded up to get Trubisky, then traded up to get Anthony Miller. He's always going to have that trait in the draft, but it also wasn't like trading up for Anthony Miller essentially cost you a fourth-round pick and you pushed your 2019 second-round pick into 2018. So to me, trading a fourth-rounder to move up and get a guy who you really like is not that big of a deal. I know a lot of people seem to freak out about losing a fourth-round pick, but like these guys, fourth-round picks are by nature hit or miss because there have already been three rounds of opportunities to take these guys. And yeah, you can land on a Jordan Howard in the fifth round or a Nick Kwiatkowski in the fourth round.
Adrian Amos.
Mm-hmm. These guys.
Eddie Jackson.
Tariq Cohen in the fourth round. But most of the time, fourth round picks are just a guy. So trading away, if you're trading away essentially just a guy to get someone in Anthony Miller who you think can be a really significant contributor, you go ahead and do it. But just generally, to answer your question, Lawrence, I think he's just learned to kind of tailor that aggression for the moment.
This segment being brought to you by Liberty Mutual Insurance. You have enough things to worry about every day. Insurance shouldn't be one of them. You can leave worry behind when Liberty stands with you. Liberty Mutual Insurance. We need to take a time out. I'm sorry, Groats.
No, that's all right.
You know what?
That's okay.
We have got your lack of radio discipline. Like, is
I'm trying to follow JJ's radio discipline lead, and I have failed.
What discipline? I just rambled for like 2 minutes.
Hey, podcasters, man, it's the future.
All I wanted to say was Joel E. A. Buniwe. That's all I wanted to say.
That's very good that you were able to say that.
That's all I wanted to say.
Mark Grody covers the Bears for us here at The Score. JJ Stankovic covers the Bears for NBC Sports Chicago. Check out his podcast, The Under Center Podcast. It's really, really good. We're going to take a break. When we come back, why was Matt Nagy the guy for the job? I'm going to ask these guys about that next here on The Score.
We're fired up. We're fired up about this.
I'm hanging out until 7 o'clock with two really good reporters. Mark Grody of our staff covers the Bears. JJ Stankovic of NBC Sports Chicago, who covers the Bears. And we are talking about the Bears. Before break, I gave you guys a chance to think about the question. So, Groats, we'll start with you. Why was Matt Nagy the right guy for this job?
The answer to that question, Lawrence, is we don't know if he's the right guy for the job.
Good response.
At this point. But I will say that he has passed every single test so far in terms of his ability to communicate, his ability to kind of say real things, the offense that he is presumably going to run. He comports himself incredibly well. I first became really impressed with Matt Nagy at the NFL Combine, because that was the first, and I wasn't at the introductory press conference, but there's a ton more people at the NFL Combine, and both of you guys know how it's set up. I mean, there's just tons of people. You're up at a podium, and you're doing the interview, and there's tons of people like right before you, and he just knocked it out of the park. I mean, he, in terms of, you know, he was getting some softball, easy type of questions, but then he would get the minutia type questions, and he answered them really well. So the way he has comported himself, I think, has been incredibly impressive. We have no idea what this guy is like in terms of a coach, his game management, his clock management, that all kind of encompasses itself. So we're going to kind of wait and see. But he's done. I've been really impressed with all his stops so far. It hasn't been a lot.
Well, then let me flip the question for you, JJ. Why did Ryan Pace hire Matt Nagy?
So I asked Mitch Trubisky this, and I asked Matt Nagy this back during that voluntary minicamp in mid-April. And my line of questioning essentially was to Trubisky, does this offense make sense to you? You've been studying it for a little bit now. You're in the very early stages of it. Does it make sense? And he's like, yeah, this offense makes sense to me. Same question to Nagy. Do you think your offense makes sense to Trubisky? Yeah, you know, I think it does. The RPO concepts, just the general feel of this offense makes sense to Trubisky. So why Ryan Pace hired Matt Nagy is because he presented himself as the best candidate to develop the biggest, most important resource the Bears have, and that is Mitch Trubisky on a rookie contract. The Bears had to go out and find someone who could make Mitch Trubisky into the quarterback that the Bears think he can be and make it happen quick while they're still paying him peanuts compared to the rest of quarterbacks in the league. So then you can go out and get the Allen Robinsons. You can go out and splurge on some of these free agents because you're barely paying your quarterback anything. That's why you go out and get Matt Nagy, the young, quarterback-driven, offensive-minded coach, to try to replicate what Sean McVay did, to try to replicate what Doug Peterson did, where you build that structure around a quarterback, make the offense make sense to the quarterback, and then hope the results follow.
I have another question that I want to ask you specifically, JJ, about Nagy versus John Fox, but we need to do an update first. We'll do an update with Nick Shepkowski, then more Bears conversation with Mark Grody and JJ Stankovic.
So we're talking about Matt Nagy, and you just heard about him and Mitchell Trubisky having a little bit of discussion about the Bears as they get ready for minicamp coming up this weekend. JJ Stankovitz of NBC Sports Chicago and Mark Grody of our staff here at The Score are here in studio with me. JJ, we're going to hear a lot about this, how different things are, because Matt Nagy is not John Fox. He's so different. It's so refreshing that he's not John Fox. What is the actual good of him not being John Fox that maybe doesn't necessarily have to do with the media?
I think it's him being a little more pliable in how he will go about being a coach. You know, John Fox did things the way John Fox would do things because he had earned that right by being a head coach in this league for, what, 15, 16 years? So where Matt Nagy will come in, and he talked about this in his opening presser, he's talked about it since, is that he's open to ideas. He's open to hearing Mark Helfrich say, you know what, Matt, I don't think this is a very good idea. He's open to hearing from Dave Ragone, you know, I don't know if you should go about this, you know, way of teaching Trubisky this certain way. He certainly is open to it from Vic Fangio about ideas for the defense. And I think you just listen to him, and he's very much a collaborator. You remember that John Fox quote, I'm not the offensive coordinator, I'm not the defensive coordinator, I'm not the special teams coordinator, but I coordinate all three. That's not what Matt Nagy is going for with this. He presents himself, at least to us in the media, as someone who's willing to have discussions about almost every aspect of this team. You know, you can walk into his office and draw on his whiteboard, and he'll consider the idea, and he'll have a discussion about it. That's where I think Matt Nagy the most differs from John Fox.
Well, and I think to that end, one of the big places that Matt Nagy is just leaving things alone is defense. Defense is Vic Fangio's, and during the minicamp, he did wander over by the defense and kind of take a look at it, but we know what his specialty is. We know why he's here, as JJ said earlier, to develop Mitch Trubisky. That's his main job. The thing that he said that most impressed me, I think it was at the NFL Combine, that he said with authority that we are going to throw the ball down the field, that teams are not going to be able to get away with the little intermediate 10 to 12 yard passes and just sit back and wait for that. And I realize that it was a tough season in terms of personnel last year that John Fox was dealing with Mike Glennon and then Mitch Trubisky, who, you know, in essence, wasn't supposed to play last year. Maybe week 13 or 14 or something like that had things gone haywire. But just the fact that he said that he had that kind of confidence, not even really having seen much of Mitchell Trubisky up close and in person or knowing what kind of wide receivers he was going to have, he knows that he has the schemes and the ability to do that, to have that kind of offense, and that impressed me a lot.
That's a really good point, because when Nagy said that, that was well before the Bears began their free agent splurge. That was before, I think even around then, the thought was Allen Robinson was still going to be in Jacksonville. So I think the point there is Nagy was confident in that without knowing who the wide receivers are going to be, who the tight ends are going to be. He knew he was going to have Mitch Trubisky, Jordan Howard, and Tariq Cohen, and that's about it. So I think that's a really good point, Mark.
Let's talk about the quarterback. Every time that I have someone on who's covered the Bears, I've found myself on the fence about Trubisky. And when you say that, people then think that you don't like the player. If I say I'm not convinced that we're seeing someone who is going to be a star in this league, there's like, oh, well, you're a hater or whatever. Here's my question. What do you think Trubisky is, and what evidence do you have to back it up?
That's a really good question, Lawrence. So in pulling from what I've seen and from talking to people, you see from Trubisky the good arm, general accuracy, good football instincts. Everyone around him talks about how great of a learner and how football hungry he is. The one thing that gave me pause was I was having a discussion with an NFL defensive player recently where he had faced Mitch Trubisky and Deshaun Watson last year. And I asked him, you know, what do you think of Trubisky? And he said, yeah, Mitch was fine. And then he proceeded to go for about 10 minutes to tell me how awesome of a player Deshaun Watson is. And it was like Trubisky didn't even exist in this discussion. It was just, you know, listen to me, how good Deshaun Watson is. He's the real deal. Trubisky, he's fine. And that doesn't necessarily mean that Trubisky's going to be bad, because I think a lot of people think Kirk Cousins was just kind of fine, and he look at the contract he just got and look at all the production he put up. But the Bears traded up to draft Mitch Trubisky with the second overall pick to make sure they got him, because they think he's going to be great. They think he's going to be more than just kind of a fine quarterback, a Kirk Cousins, a Matt Stafford. They think he's a level above that, a guy who can win you a Super Bowl. And you're right, we're 1 year into his career, so it's far too early to say that. But just that one conversation really stuck out to me of like, Deshaun Watson's the guy who's going to go win you the Super Bowl. Trubisky, yeah, he's fine.
Yeah, and last year was such an uneven season. And he goes in with some things not on his side, with a suspect offensive coordinator in Dal Loggins, a suspect head coach in John Fox. Again, probably playing prematurely, that he probably had in his head. I mean, he's got to be standing by and ready for anything, but he has in his head that he's not going to be the quarterback, that he is absolutely the backup quarterback. He ends up playing in 12 games, and if you just look at like some of the numbers, you said the accuracy, 60%, that's pretty good. 4-8 as a starter, set. I mean, exactly average when it comes to 7 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. This is a guy, too, that was sacked 31 times in 12 games. Some of that is offensive line. A lot of that was Mitchell Trubisky, too, and his inability to read the pocket.
Well, and the wide receiver's not getting open either.
And yeah, I mean, when Kendall Wright was your leading wide receiver last year. You know who your number two wide receiver was last year?
Josh Bellamy.
And three was Tariq Cohen. You know who caught the most touchdown passes last year? I bet you know, JJ.
Adam Shaheen
with three. So you have a guy that did not have the weapons. He didn't necessarily have the coaching. And there were moments where Mitchell Trubisky was bad, where he looked like a rookie. But there just wasn't enough going for him last year to make a true judgment about him as an NFL player.
Yeah, and you know, you look at the numbers he had, and if you stack him up against a lot of rookie quarterbacks who had to start that many games, they're in line with it. It's not every year you get a Robert Griffin coming out and having a 102.4 quarterback rating. You know, Andrew Luck in his first year, his QBR was like 82s, fine. Like, so there are certain guys
Peyton
who...
Peyton Manning, didn't he have like 90
Peyton Manning,
interceptions?
Peyton Manning was terrible his first year because the rest of the team around him was terrible. So I think we'll have a better idea of who Trubisky is truly after year three. And another thing that sticks out was Ben Roethlisberger in week three. We had him on a conference call when... the Bears are playing the Steelers, and he made the comment of, you know, everyone's trying to anoint the next great quarterback, and it takes about 2 to 3 years for us to really know if this guy is a one-year wonder, if the league is adjusted to him and now he's not, he can't deal with that, or if he really is good enough to, when the league adjusts to him, to be better than that and make the league continue to adjust to him. Now we kind of know Ben Roethlisberger's kind of a cranky pants about young quarterbacks anyway.
No doubt.
Cranky pants. He's going cranky pants.
But
my goodness.
But generally speaking, though, I think he has a point of it takes a while for these guys to get off the ground. And even if you get off the ground great in your first year, it doesn't mean you're guaranteed success going forward.
In the Robert Griffin example, by the way, just so you have this in your back pocket, Mitchell Trubisky, QBR, his rating last year, 77.5. Mike Glennon, 76.9.
Right.
Week one and week three, Mike Glennon, not bad.
Agreed.
Let's look at some of the games.
Mike Glennon is our starting quarterback.
Not anymore, he's not. And now he's probably the number three in Arizona.
There were some games that were just so low volume. I mean, do you remember the Carolina game? I think it was 4 for 8. I mean, he had 8 attempts in a game.
Yeah,
the Baltimore game, 8 for 16. Really good against Los Angeles.
He was good against Cincinnati.
Cincinnati. But there were some games that were maybe John Fox and Dal Loggins were right to kind of keep him as conservative as can be. But there were just some games where they were so careful with him, and I just think that he wasn't. I don't think he was coached particularly well.
They're playing generally what you would do with a rookie quarterback, where you just run very conservative, but. Then that meant everyone knew you were running the ball to Jordan Howard on the first two downs, and then you set up a 3rd and 7 with a wide receiver
with guys
and tight
can't
end
get
group
off,
that you
get
can't,
off a jam.
Exactly.
You
so
got guys that aren't great route runners.
Right. So then that leads to what we saw last year, and it is sort of like a chicken or the egg thing with the Loggins and Fox regime of were they that aggressively conservative, which is a fun phrase to say, were they so conservative because there were no weapons around them and they had a rookie quarterback, or were they just so conservative because that's who they were? I don't know. And, I mean, something had to change with the coaching staff and with the personnel, but, you know, that is such an interesting question to go back. I think we'll find out a lot more this year about what they could have done differently in 2017 with Trubisky.
I have a couple more questions for you guys, and one of them will be about Kevin White. The other will be about defense, and we'll throw in a couple other things as well. Mark Grody, JJ Stankovic, I got one more segment with them coming up next here on The Score.
I got a few more minutes with JJ Stankovic and Mark Grody, and then we're going to switch over to baseball after 7 o'clock.
There's something blooming this spring, and it's Powerball. That Powerball jackpot has just reached $233 million. That's right, $233 million. Now go get outside and go play Powerball before they draw tonight, Wednesday, May 9th, 9:59. That's when they're going to draw. You can visit IllinoisLottery.com, download the Illinois Lottery app, or head to your local retailer to pick your numbers today. Play responsibly. Must be 18 or older to play.
Bears
is what we're discussing with Groats and JJ. What's fair to expect from Kevin White?
Oh, that's a really good question.
That's the answer.
Fair is the operative word in that, because I don't know what's fair. I don't know if it's fair to expect Kevin White to play 16 games. I don't know if it's fair to say he's only going to play in one game because he always gets hurt. I feel like almost any expectation for Kevin White this year is unfair. And that is what I'm going into the year with, is that the Bears don't have to have an expectation for Kevin White because they've insulated themselves with Robinson, Gabriel, Miller, Burton. You know, you still have Shaheen, Sims, Cohen, these guys who can catch the ball. They've insulated themselves from needing to rely on Kevin White as much as they were last year. So almost anything you get out of him is a bonus. And I think that's a really good place for Kevin White to be in.
They're operating, the Bears are, under the assumption that he will not be available or he will not be a factor. And I think that, like, even beyond the injuries, and, you know, it's the left shoulder blade, it's the ankle, it's the calf, all these things that he's had, we still don't know if he could play football. You know, that immediately we don't know if he's as fast as he once was, as explosive as he once was. I mean, JJ, we watched the mini camp. And he made a really nice play on a 50-50 ball. Go up and get it and made a play, and it was like, wow! You know, but that's the first time I've ever seen him make a play that we thought he was supposed to make. So that's my concern right now, not just the injuries. And the injuries is a huge thing, obviously, but we still don't know how good of a wide receiver this guy is.
Yeah, I'll say this, that I think Matt Nagy is saying all the right things as it relates to Kevin White. Of, look, this is a very gradual process. He has to start stacking practices, and it starts with a couple of those wow plays. Just have a couple wow plays during practice, start building on that, building up his confidence that, you know what, I can go out and I can win a 50-50 ball. I can beat a cornerback on a double move, just because he hasn't been able to do that, whether it's due to health reasons or due to the fact that his confidence really hasn't been there. And it's, you set Kevin White up for success by not relying on him to succeed, I think this year is what the Bears are going with.
And he's not going to get the benefit of the doubt. I don't in training camp. He's got to go out there and show them, you know, in Bourbonnais that he is capable, or he may not be on the 2018 Chicago
Bears. I think
Bears.
I don't know if it's as dire, just given that he still is so cheap, and you know,
and they've made up their mind about the fifth year,
and he is Ryan Pace's firstborn.
So, right, I mean, look, if it were to come down to it, your fourth receiver should have to contribute somewhat on special teams. So White is going to have to be out on at least a special teams unit or two. And then, you know, Josh Bellamy, Benny Fowler, maybe at the back end of the roster. But I think the case here is, if let's say Javon Wims comes in and has just a, like, whoa, where'd this guy come from training camp? Then Kevin White could be on the roster bubble, because if he's not the special teamer that Bellamy and Fowler are, and then all of a sudden, it's like, well, we got to keep Javon Wims, but Kevin White's really not having a good training camp. That's your worst-case scenario. The best-case scenario is that Kevin White comes in, and he looks at the situation where he's not going to start at Robinson's position. He's not going to start at Miller's position. He's not going to start at Gabriel's position. he's got to fight to earn time, similar to what Kyle Fuller had to do last year, where he wasn't going to start at corner with Amukamara and Fuller and Cooper there. He was not in line to start, and he had to earn that playing time. That's what you want to see out of Kevin White.
Let's talk defense, because we probably haven't spent enough time talking about it.
No one ever does with the Bears right now.
I actually love how they're built up the middle. You know, I think they're very strong with Akeem Hicks and Goldman in the middle, and now you've added Roquan Smith, Danny Trevathan. I like their safeties a lot. I probably like their safeties more than most people. I'm concerned that there isn't enough edge rush pressure. Where is that pressure going to come from?
The middle of the defense?
Okay.
I mean, well, that's a good question, because if it doesn't, and Leonard Floyd doesn't take the next step in his development, or he gets injured again, and Kylie Fitz doesn't turn out to be a whole lot, or Aaron Lynch doesn't turn out to be a whole lot, the edge rush is going to be, it's going to be weak, and there's no real way around that. So if that is the case, then you got to get Roquan Smith to the quarterback. You got to get Trevathan to the quarterback. You got to hope Akeem Hicks can replicate and maybe build on his season so he can finally earn his deserving bid to the Pro Bowl.
Should have gone last year.
That's where it's going to have to come from.
Yeah, in this defense, in the 3-4 defense, you don't want your defensive end, Akeem Hicks, as good as it is, you don't want him being your sack leader. You'll take 8.5 sacks from your left defensive end. Maybe you get more pressure this year from Jonathan Bullard, who's going to have more responsibility, presumably Roy Robertson-Harris. I hate to keep putting it on Vic Fangio, but he's going to have to continue to find creative ways to get to the quarterback if they don't have that personnel. The Bears did have 42 sacks last year, and, you know, for perspective, it was the Steelers who had 56 to lead the NFL. Buffalo had 27. So They're
seventh in the league.
It's not terrible. And that's where I give some credit to. And you know what? Four of those came from Brunell McPhee, who's not there. And believe it or not, Lamar Houston,
came in and did, what, 5-4 games or whatever it was?
Four and five.
So you got 8 sacks right there that are gone. And I think that you could give some credit to Vic Fangio for having gotten to 42 sacks last year. And he's going to have to figure it out this year in more of a non-conventional way, because there just isn't that pure pass rusher unless Leonard Floyd is it this year.
Mini camps coming up this weekend, gentlemen. Groats, I'll start with you. What are you interested to find out?
For the rookie mini camp, I mean, I'm actually very interested to see, obviously, you know, watching Roquan Smith presumably go sideline to sideline, because that's sort of the way he's been sold, watching all these rookies, and then also getting the reaction from Matt Nagy and seeing exactly what he does this early with these guys, how much action there will be and what the responsibilities are and how much of a factor they're going to be this season.
JJ?
I'd like to see Joel Iebuniwe practice.
I just wanted to say the name again.
Well, somewhat. Yeah. But I think he's a guy who, you know, there were some people scratching their heads when they took him in the fourth round. I'm like, well, wait a minute. You know, we only had a 6th or 7th round grade on this guy. What are they doing? But, you know, for 4th round picks, it is kind of a crapshoot. But looking at some of the scouting reports on him, what can he provide? And how does he move around the field now that he's, you know, kind of moved on to the NFL? How does he look? How are his instincts? All these different things, I think, are what I'm going to be interested in. Because Roquan Smith, you know, yeah, I'm interested in seeing Roquan Smith practice. But I almost feel like we already know what the Bears have in Roquan Smith. And it's not the most interesting thing, because we know it. I think we know what the Bears have in James Daniels. Whether or not he plays guard or center right now, I don't think matters. It'll matter week 3 of training camp. Anthony Miller, you know, a guy, if he can come in healthy, he said he's healthy from the ankle injury he had, or a foot injury, whatever it was. But
Kylie Fitz is a great dark horse, too. You brought him up earlier.
Yeah, Kylie Fitz is a great dark horse as well.
Because if he's healthy, I mean, he's a 6th-round pick who could have been a higher pick. He was tortured by injuries in college, and he is a guy who could give you that pass rush that we're talking about, if healthy. And that's a big if with that guy.
You look at Kylie Fitz's numbers in 2015 were awesome. I think it was 7.5 sacks, 8 tackles for a loss, 10 pass breakups, and 4 forced fumbles.
Wow.
That's production from an outside linebacker. That if the Bears get half of that from him this year, that's a great season.
And back to your guy, Iebuniwe, he was the guy, too, that it seemed like Ryan Pace was raving about the most in terms of the tape. He said he kept calling Matt Nagy over and said, hey, you got to see this, you got to see this, you got to see this play. So that's a good point by you to watch him.
And look, the Bears have hit on some 4th-round picks recently, so yeah. I would trust Ryan Pace in the 4th round.
Gentlemen, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for coming down and being in studio and giving us a good primer for what we're going to see this weekend.
Good stuff. The long month of preparation for a month off begins.
That's very
true. Is this operating? Because I'm not leaving here. I, I,
I'm gonna go over to
that CVS and buy some socks.
You could get more umbrellas, probably.
Yeah.
You could try Pedway. You could go Pedway.
Oh yeah. I'm not very smart with the Pedway system. See, this is a problem.
You should.
Could
get
I have
familiar.
Gotten from the Hilton down the
yes.
road to the?
I could have.
Yes. I'm an idiot.
Yes, we could have gotten you there on the Pedway.
Wow.
It's a underutilized great thing about the city of Chicago.
I know that it's there, and I got. Washed
and
up.
it lets like right in this building, like there's a
yeah, I blew it. Yeah,
Mark Grody covers the Bears for us here at the Score. JJ does a great job of doing it for NBC Sports Chicago. We thank them both for coming in a great hour of football content. When we come back, we're going to talk some baseball. There's something I've been dying for you to hear, and I'm looking forward to your reaction to it. We'll do that next here on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.